It's the California Wine Country Podcast with Steve Jackson and Dan Berger. We taste, we laugh, we learn.
It is time for California Wine Country, brought to you by Bottle Barn and Della Tofada. Dan Berger, of course, and today we're featuring the great Belletto Vineyards. And Anthony Beckman, winemaker at Belletto, is back with us. Good to see you, bud.
Yeah, good to be here, always.
Give us first your story. Again, tell everyone how you got into the wine biz and became the winemaker there.
It's a long story.
That's so all right. We got till midnight.
Bring it on. So my first job, actually my first passion in life, was as a newspaper reporter. So I spent went to the University of Missouri and have a bachelor's of journalism. Worked in Washington, D.C. and Philadelphia at the Philadelphia Inquirer. And then right when I was about to move on, internet came out, newspapers started withering. I left my newspaper job and moved to San Francisco to do dot-com stuff where there was money. And in that time, spent all my money and all my time visiting Sonoma County, talking to winemakers, falling in love with wine, falling in love with the food and just Sonoma County in general, and quit my job in 2002 and got my first harvest at Dry Creek at Kivera Vineyards. And then went to New Zealand, then bounced around, went back to school, and then landed at Belletto Vineyards in December of 2006. So I've been at Belletto Vineyards now 13th. This will be my 13th harvest coming up.
That's a long time.
It's a good run.
Very impressive. And then the history of Belletto. They do such good work.
Yeah, awesome story, too. You know, it's really about this 17-year-old high school student, John Belletto, in 1979. And his father was diagnosed with cancer in his senior year, and instead of going to college on a full-ride sports scholarship, he stayed home with his mom. They had 4 acres that they planted to vegetables in 1979, and his mother, Hazel, was a survivor of the Dust Bowl, and her whole philosophy on life was, anytime you have money, buy land. And so they would save and save and save and buy a little more land, and save and save and save and buy a little more land. And they expanded that in 1977 when they started to about 1990-ish from those 4 acres to about 600 acres of vegetables planted right in our area. A couple things happened to switch that. Mostly El Nino, the El Nino storms in the late 90s, the winter of 97-98, washed out the first planting of seedlings, washed out the second planting of seedlings.
Oh, man.
Washed out the third planting of seedlings, and you're looking at $500,000, $500,000, each planting. So they're out $1.5 million with nothing in the ground. The bank calls the loan. Go into like the madness of what do we do now? And instead of leaving Sonoma County, they switch gears and started planting wine grapes.
Nice story there.
Yeah.
And John was 17
when he started. And, you know, I've worked at a lot of different places, and John Belletto is the first boss I've ever had who works harder than I do. He is always there. He's always pushing. He's very passionate about what he does. He's an incredible leader in terms of longevity. He has employees that have been working for him for 35 years. I've been there 13 years. My assistant winemaker's been with me 10 years. My cellar workers have been there going on 20 years plus. So it's just sort of a family environment that's making wine.
BellettoVineyards.com. Dan's going to give us his thoughts. I almost said thoughts and prayers. No, that's not. He's going to just give us his thoughts.
That was
thoughts
a couple of weeks
thanks.
Ago.
So Belletto. I mean,
what a project. And yeah. The most amazing thing for me is when I moved here in 86, I started tasting through all the wines that I had never could get my hands on when I was living in San Diego, and I moved up here in 86, started seeing the opportunities for trying some of these wines that never crossed my radar before. And this was one of the more amazing projects because here was a property that was located close enough to Santa Rosa, so you never gave it much thought as to what region it was in. It's really Russian River. It's the heart of the Russian River.
It's right in the center of Russian River.
It's just the most beautiful property on the planet for that. There's not a lot of hills there. It's relatively flat land, but it's got some wonderful drainage. It's got some cooling influences from the ocean. It's got some fabulous varieties planted because somebody got the good idea, actually, to go varietal by varietal and tried a little of everything. And this has been a project that I have watched for a long time, and this has just been so much fun because the wines get better and better and better.
Not to mention the veggies. Is that still happening?
That is not. So all the vegetable was sold in the like 2001 and 2002.
Okay,
and
but
switched over 100% to wine growing at that same time.
Okay, in 94, the family grew the business into the largest vegetable farm in Northern California, more than 70 different vegetables, 700 acres.
Yes.
And now that 700 acres is
predominantly
all wine.
Now wine grapes. That's correct. So. And the beauty, from my standpoint, is John Boletto is selling 95% of those grapes to other wineries in the area. And so I walk through these acreages, and there's 22 different sites scattered throughout the Santa Rosa Plains, the Laguna Ridge, and Sebastopol Hills. And I pick my very favorites. I only have to take the top 5%. I know every vine in these vineyards. And that's what really is, for me, exciting because it's
so you get first pick.
I don't. Yeah. Yes, but don't say that out loud.
I was just thinking that. Did I say that out loud?
We all thought it out loud at the same time.
Wow. Yeah, I love this story, and they just make amazing wines. I heard Dan say he didn't know you were making a sparkler.
Yeah, we are. Our first vintage was 2011. We did about 200 cases, which was very small. And in sort of classic John Boletto style, we were talking about making sparkling wine. And I go, John, you know, I'm a little bit nervous. I've never done it. And I go, here's all the things we need to do. And then we need to do a second fermentation in the bottle and put it away for 4 years and then come back to it and disgorge it. And I thought that would be the deal breaker. And instead, he looked at me and goes, 4 years? And I thought he would say, oh, it's too expensive. And he goes, we need to do this year. Your son will be 5 years old when we release this wine. I was a new dad at that time. I had a one-year-old boy. And I'm like, oh, you're totally right. And he was totally right. And we did it that year in 2011. And I opened up a bottle of the 2011 about this time in 2012. It had just finished its fermentation in the bottle. And it was awesome. And I ran up to John's office, and I go, John, this is everything I wanted it to be. We need to double production. So we doubled it in 2012, and then we doubled again in 2013. Classically made, this is 4 years of waiting, you know, before you disgorge it. And you can taste that. I think you can taste it.
Absolutely. It's got that
Brut Rosé?
Brut Rosé, but it's got a little bit of that yeasty component, which comes from the yeast, exactly. And the interesting thing is the fruit component is still very, very prominent. Plus, it's got this gorgeous creaminess in the middle palate. It's just wonderful. It's got richness and creaminess, terrific acidity. It's not going to be just for sipping. It's going to be for food as well.
And this is a wine that I love. And what I've really enjoyed with the 2013 is we've had this now on the market for about 14 months. And to watch it change in those 14 months, of course, right now when we're down to the last 10% of the wine to sell, it's at its peak. I think it's just showing gorgeously, and that never, you know, that's always the kicker as a winemaker is right when the wine is showing the way exactly how I want it, it's almost sold out. So I will disgorge the 2014 next Tuesday. So, you know, on to the next vintage here shortly.
Well, the richness of this wine is the most amazing thing because you normally think of Russian River Valley as being the place where acid is your touchstone. Well, here you've got both the acidity and the richness. So it's a great combination of both ends of the spectrum.
And this is the wine I most drink. So there's a joke in our tasting room because on Friday I'll go and I'll take two bottles and I'll say, put it on my tab. And it's one for Friday night and one for Saturday night. And it's just the wine that I drink, like drink. And I don't do that with a lot of the wines that I make because I get too technical. And this is just
really?
all enjoyment. Just all enjoyment.
And how many different wines is Boletto making these days?
Each year I bottle 22 different wines.
Jeez.
9 Pinot Noirs, 5 Chardonnays, Zinsrag, Verts, Sauv Blanc, Pinot Gris. I'm sure I'm forgetting some, but that's the gist of the most of it.
And don't forget that Pinot Gris. That's pretty amazing wine.
You know, I almost brought it. I brought Sauv Blanc instead.
Well, that's okay. The Sauvignon Blanc's great, too.
The Pinot Gris is just from this incredible 8-acre vineyard outside of Sebastopol. So it's just under about 850 feet elevation, very cold site. And if John Belletto had planted that 8 acres to Pinot Noir, we'd be a lot richer. Pinot Gris is not a moneymaker. Thank you, Dan. I love the optimism. If that had been planted to Pinot Noir, we could sell that for double or double and a half the price per ton. But people have said to John, why do you have Pinot Gris there? And he has the best answer ever, which is, I like to drink Pinot Gris. And hence, 8 acres of Pinot Gris and some of the, you know, Boardwalk and Park Place vineyard land in all of Sonoma County.
It's the Belletto family, John, his wife Terry, and their two daughters are involved too, right?
They are. Jacqueline Belletto, who's the oldest daughter, is running the tasting room. Katerina and Jacqueline, the two daughters, have both worked for me in the lab during harvest. They've been the sort of lab assistant harvest intern, and it's just been a pleasure. When I first started working, Jacqueline Belletto was 12 or 13 years old. So to watch these young daughters grow up and go to college and get their degrees and then come back to start working in the wine industry has been just an awesome thing to be a part of.
I can imagine. It is California Wine Country, brought to you by Della Tofola and Bottle Barn. And Anthony is here, the winemaker at Belletto Vineyards. You know, I don't know. For years, certainly since we've started this thing 11 years ago, I've been such a big fan of Belletto. I mean, it's like everything you guys do is right. It's right on.
Well, we work really hard at it. I would love to say it's easy. We push hard. We work hard. We have a really good group of people, and when you get a group of people all going in the same direction, you can do amazing things. I'd like to think back to when John Belletto and I started talking 12 and 13 years ago about where we wanted to be in 10 years, we sort of are there. These decisions we made 10 years ago, 12 years ago, when we were just sitting down and John and I were just starting to work with each other, you know, they've all paid off, and the wine business is so slow. So you make this decision, and you don't see a payoff, and you don't see a payoff, and you don't see a payoff, and this is year and year and year and year. And then, like, year 7 or 8, you see a half payoff. And then year 9, you see 3/4 payoff. And then year 10 is like, wow, these things we did so long ago have finally all gelled. Everything's come together, and we're just in this really awesome, special place of having these estate vineyards that we farm and control. And I've hit a point where I'm making wine now for my 13th year down the same rows with the same Pinot Noir and the same Chardonnay. And it's really awesome, this idea of being in touch with the vineyards, being in touch with the land, and the power and strength of having estate vineyards where, you know, Belletto Vineyards owns these. They're not going to go away because somebody buys them. They're not going to go away because a contract expires. You know, this is family land made in a family winery.
Anthony said something earlier that I hope people didn't miss, because it's really an important, if not the essential, message. And that is, Anthony says he knows every vine. Boy, that is so crucial to making greatness, because greatness only occurs if the vines will respond to what you know they can do. And you're not going to pick something that you can sense is just off center. So, and by walking those vines, one of the reasons why great winemakers are spending so much time in July and August in the vineyards, that's where the wine is made.
It is, you know, exactly, and my goal really is to have it made in the vineyard, and then I feel like I'm just shepherding this wine in the right direction. I'm trying not to do anything. The less I do, the better the wine is. So you make it in the vineyard. You work hard in the vineyard. John and his crew on the farming side work incredibly hard to get these grapes in. And I think it shows. And we just opened, for all you listeners, we just opened the 2018 Rosé of Pinot Noir, a wine that I really like. Again, Dan and I were talking earlier about picking grapes earlier. This is just about 12.9, 13.0 alcohol. It has just enough fruit to be fruity. It has just enough savory to be savory. The balance is dead on. It's kind of everything comes, hits you at once, and you could drink a glass of this real easily on a day like today.
And Dan Berger is going to talk about this.
Oh, yeah. This is absolutely – if you're thinking about how good rosé can be in Sonoma County, you think of 6 or 10 or 12 or 14 great producers of pink wine. They're all great wines. There are probably 30 of them that are truly great, but then you're down to about 6 or 8 that are the very, very cream of the crop. Boletto's always in the running for the very best, and part of the reason is that Anthony really cares for the acidity that's here, but you don't want it to be acid in your mouth. What you want is a completely seamless approach. So the fruit is the first thing you taste, and it's the last thing you taste. But in the middle of the palate, you're getting all these other nuances. This wine could have been released months ago. But what this wine did in the last several weeks in the bottle was the secret. Giving it the body, giving it the richness, and still having the acidity to keep it bright and fresh.
Does Dan Lay It Down Burger ever lay down rosé? I forget.
Well, I don't by design, but I do occasionally by accident. And what I've learned is that when you get a great rosé...
You accidentally lay it down in your cellar?
What happens is I buy a bunch of this stuff because I intend to drink it. Then there's more and more, and then I, you know...
Yeah.
So finally end up about a year later, I say, what is this doing here? And you open it up, and sometimes you learn something. What's really interesting is the Boletto Pinot Noir actually is one of those wines that a year later is actually as good, if not better, for different reasons. It's not the same wine, but it's an interesting wine nonetheless.
I agree. We've opened up some 4- and 5- and 6-year-old rosés, and while the fruit element fades, this incredible savory element comes in. The mouthfeel stays the same. It gets a little bit more thick, you know, so it gets a little bit more viscosity, and it becomes much more of an intellectual wine, a wine that you start thinking about, whereas this, to me, is just a wine where you sit down and you put some... Like, we had some oysters or some anything, really, any seafood.
Right on.
He, like you
said, on a day like today.
I was going to bring Pinot or Syrah, and I couldn't bring myself to do it because I looked out the window, and it just looked blue skies and hot and sunny. And so I only brought white wines today to cherish our three-day
But rosé like this is really also fascinating for a whole different reason. So... What you're doing is you're giving it skin contact, so therefore there's going to be flavors in here that may not be noticeable when it's this young. So, and in some ways, the French do a little bit of this Van Gris style, and these wines do take age. This one would be fascinating. I would say if I were, I'm going to do this. I'm going to buy an extra bottle of this, put it in the cellar, and wait 2 years, and we'll see.
Let's open it on the show.
We'll do it. Open a 2-year-old rosé on the show.
Yeah, okay.
And we'll laugh about it. Hopefully laugh.
The winemaker at Boletto Vineyards, Anthony Beckman, is back with us on California Wine Country with Dan Berger, brought to you by Bottle Barn and Della Tofola. And Barry Herbst checked in. He's running around like a madman. Couldn't come in today, but as Dan pointed out in an email, in the Bottle Barn ad in the paper this morning, the 2018 rosé that we were just discussing...
Right.
Was part of the ad for Bottle Barn.
It's just been released, so that's why it's in the ad.
Yeah, makes sense. Della Tofola wishes all their customers the best for Harvest 2019, which has already begun in some areas and with the sparkling grapes, right?
Yeah, close. I saw a truck go by with bins loaded early this morning, which I'm sure was for sparkling. I'll probably pick mine within a week. I was out there this morning, and it's close. It was a little closer than I thought it would be, actually. So It was a little wake-up.
Della Tofola has been making equipment for the wine industry and beverage industry worldwide, but they're based right here in Santa Rosa, from crushers to conveyors and pumps to presses, filters to fillers, and complete packaging solutions as well. If any of you in the wine beverage world out there need any last-minute equipment, Della Tofola has a selection of equipment in stock now and ready for pickup or delivery, 544-5300. And they've got great techs as well to help you out. Della Tofola USA. Online at DellaTofola.us. Proud sponsor of California Wine Country right here on The Drive. And, of course, it's a great podcast as well. Every episode of California Wine Country is on our podcast, which can be heard on every place that offers great podcasts, and also at calwinecountry.com. And now, here's Dan Berger.
You can subscribe to it, too.
Yes, don't forget to subscribe. Okay, the great Boleto Vineyards is in today. Anthony Beckman, the winemaker. And, I wanted to ask about the winery tasting situation and everything like
that.
Yeah,
absolutely. We're right in between Santa Rosa and Sebastopol on Highway 12. Or sorry, on Occidental Road, just north of Highway 12. So if you're heading down toward the west side of Sonoma County, you've probably driven by 1,000 times. We're open every day. Odds are that Jacqueline Boleto will be behind the bar to help you. So it's, I think, one of the great things of being in Sonoma County is that you'll have a family member, you know, whose name is on the bottle, who is working every day to serve wine and make everything run right. And it's really, I think, what makes Sonoma County just this incredible wine region is the people behind the counter, the people who work. And then for the next wine, Dan and Steve and I, we poured the 2017 Sauvignon Blanc. This is Russian River Valley. This is a wine that I like a lot. It's a little bit understated. I think a lot of people look at Sauvignon Blanc and expect your head to pop off in this sort of this New Zealand gooseberry style. I've stepped away from that a lot. This is neutral oak fermentation. It's 6 months in oak to age it. It goes through a portion of ml each year. It depends sort of how acidic it is.
Malolactic
fermentation.
Took me years
to get there. Bacteria, right?
So, yeah.
First fermentation is yeast, and second is bacteria, and you're really converting malic acid, which has two little tart groups on it in terms of the molecule, and you're converting it to lactic acid, which only has one little tart group, and it changes the whole profile of it. So here we have a Sauvignon Blanc that, again, has stepped back from this fruity, gooseberry, cat pee over the top and has really stepped into bright but savory. Really, you know, I think when you taste these three wines, you get a really good feel of what I like in wines, because while they're really different and unique and distinctive to the varietal, they also have a statement of what I really love about wine, and that's when you take something that's a little bit fruity, something that's a little bit savory, and you put it with low alcohol and high acid, and then a viscosity through the mid-palate, which all these wines have. It's really the wines that make me excited.
This wine has an interesting aromatic to it, which reminds me of kiwi fruit, not kiwi people. So there's a kind of a faint tropical note here, but the note leans more along the lines of kiwi fruit. And what I like about that is that it definitely is distinctively varietal. So you can smell it. You smell it. You say, oh, it's Sauvignon Blanc. But yet it's really not grassy. And so that's what is so appealing about it.
17, right?
Yeah. 2017.
Okay.
2017, which was a great vintage for us. This is only the third vintage that we've done Sauvignon Blanc. So John Boleto, of course, has farmed Sauvignon Blanc, and it has always been under contract, long-term contract. And so in 2015, the contract finally expired, and I was able to make the first vintage of Sauvignon Blanc for Boleto Vineyards. And I ended up hating that wine pretty passionately. And I looked back to say, where did I make all my mistakes? And it was kind of this reckoning of, what did I do wrong? And so when the 2016 harvest came, and I'm still made fun of for this, I realized that the vineyard was very uneven. And this goes back to why you have to have estate vineyards, right? Or why I have to have estate vineyards, because you can do it year after year after year and improve. I realized that the vineyard was not as even as I thought it was. So I took every six rows and broke them into their own block, and each section of six rows had a different color of tape. So there was pink and blue and white and red and orange and polka dot. And I sampled each six rows by themselves for the 2016 harvest and the 2017 harvest. And I really narrowed in to know exactly what I wanted and what I liked. And the 16 and 17 and the 18 that we bottled about 3 months ago is all just where I want it. And that's the beauty of having estate vineyards and having an owner who will tolerate a pick call that goes pick three rows of red tape and then switch over to the blue tape and pick six rows, and then switch back to the red tape and pick the last three or until you fill up the bins. And to have a grower who's the owner, who's also a partner with me to make these wines. We couldn't make this wine unless John Bledo and I were working, you know, side by side, again, moving in the same direction to, like, let's make something that is just fantastic.
Superb wine. Nothing less than superb. It's Sauvignon Blanc is a reflection of its soil more than some other white wine grapes. In this case, you're picking up a little teeny bit of the green qualities of Russian River, but it's not green that you're smelling. You're smelling that sort of that bright, faintly green character from the kiwi fruit. To me, that's what I get every time I smell this wine. I'm getting that. So it's very pretty wine.
What's the alcohol on this?
You asked me these questions.
13.4 on the label.
And I'm really close. My labels are always, with one exception, are always within 0.2 percentage. And my one exception was in the 2014 harvest. I made a last-minute blend change, and the labels were printed, and I was off by about 0.7, which was a little embarrassing. The wine was better for it, but the label was not as close as I would like it to be. And other than that, I'm really I think it's sort of honesty in winemaking and honesty in advertising that the what's on the bottle should be as close as you can make it,
right?
With, you know, given the guidelines of how crazy even registering and analyzing alcohol can be.
Where are we now, guys?
Chardonnay.
Yeah, we moved to Chardonnay, of course, because you can't be here sitting with Steve and not have Chardonnay on the table. We know that.
I am a Chardonnay guy.
I learned that the first time I was here years ago, and Steve said, "Where's the Chardonnay?" And I didn't know I was supposed to bring Chardonnay.
Is this a 17?
This is a 2017 Chardonnay.
And how many shards are you guys making?
I'm doing five different Chardonnays right now. I do the Cider Ridge Chardonnay, which we are now pouring, 2017 Cider Ridge Chardonnay, Burnside Road Chardonnay, which is right next to it, Sexton Hill Chardonnay, the Teresa Chardonnay, which is our un-oaked stainless steel, and the Russian River Chardonnay. So five Chardonnays, which is hard
and
to imagine.
The Teresa Chardonnay is named after John's wife, Terry.
Absolutely. So Terry Belletto, back in 2005, before I was working there, made a statement about wanting to take away all the oak influence in Chardonnay. And the next day, John Belletto, of course, another advantage to having vineyards and owning the vineyards, the next day he picked 5 tons of Chardonnay. It went into a stainless steel tank and fermented. And all through the fermentation, everyone called it Teresa Chardonnay. Then that was the name of it. And so when it came to make a label, it's like, well, this is really Teresa Chardonnay. And we've been making it ever since 2005 in this very crisp stainless steel, you know, very focused style. The wine we have today is the 2017 Cider Ridge Vineyard. This is one of my favorite vineyards. It's high elevation. It's about 850 feet, almost 900, in the Sebastopol Hills. So it's the top of Burnside Road, where Burnside Road intersects Sexton Road, for the locals out there. And here we have this incredible place to grow Chardonnay. People talk about Pinot Noir being really hard to make. I think Chardonnay is one of the most difficult wines to make.
I was going to ask that about, in all your years of winemaking, I've always heard Pinot, those grapes can be tough. You have to really be gentle, I guess?
Yes.
Is Pinot the hardest to make,
Well, I think anytime you're dealing with a white wine, it's so delicate and light, especially the way I want to make it, that if you don't get three strikes, right? You get one strike, because if you make a mistake, it shows and you're out. Not that it'll be a terrible wine, but it just won't be this pinnacle of Chardonnay that
you want.
And all of our, you know, all these people in Russian River Valley and Sonoma Coast, we're all striving to get to this level, way up here. And you make one mistake and you won't reach there. It's just how it is. It's heartbreaking and hard. And if you forget one day to go through and smell all your barrels, you know, the next day you go and there's no return. And it's really hard. Pinot gives you two strikes minimum. right? So it's just has a little bit more slack. You can make a mistake or a small mistake and still get away with it. You can never make a big mistake, but you can make a small mistake with Pinot. And with Chardonnay, everything you do has an impact on the wine. And
this one's got citrus. And here's an interesting aspect to this. I don't know what I call mint. This is mint, but it's some sort of unusual mint. I'm not sure what it is, but it's citrusy and minty all at the same time. It's not oaky. There's no oak noticeable. And what's fascinating about this is that I know that this had seen some oak. So where did that go?
Well, you know, so this is about 35% new French oak, which you would never taste or smell.
Can't smell it.
Where you really sense it is, it has this incredible, to me, persistence in the mouth. It has a great structure, a texture, a little bit of phenolics, and that's really where the oak is coming in. It took me 10 years to find this oak. It took me talking to who I consider to be the very best barrel producers in the world, and meeting the owners and meeting the coopers and telling them exactly what I wanted, and trialing barrel after barrel after barrel and rejecting it and being like, no, you know, I don't want vanilla, I don't want coconut, I don't want butterscotch, I don't want char, you know. And it was just this list of things I didn't want. I would smell it in one barrel and I'd be like, no, 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 no. And it took 10 years of saying no before I found the coopers who were making barrels the way I want to make wine.
Was this a lighter toast?
It is. It's all lighter toast. It's aged longer. It's lighter toast. It's it needs more time in barrel. This is an 18-month barrel program. And really, this Chardonnay and the single vineyard Chardonnays I'm doing, this is me swinging for the bleachers. I think Chardonnay is a pinnacle of wine around the world. And Chardonnay is...
Looking at Dan's face when you said swinging for the bleachers, I think you hit a home run on this.
Oh, side. Yeah.
It's an awesome... And in 5 years, this will be better. You know, really, this is just starting
and
to...
This is the one I would put away for 5 more years,
for sure.
Wrapping up this week's California Wine Country, brought to you by Bottle Barn and Della Tofola, Dan Berger. And today we're featuring Anthony Beckman, the winemaker for 13 years at the fabulous Belletto Vineyards, BellettoVineyards.com. And you need to go and do some wine tasting and check out these folks in Sebastopol, basically.
Just outside, so between right on Occidental Road. And it's a super friendly. I mean, what we really strive to do is convey the feeling of family. It's really important to us. And we look at family very seriously, and family starts at the top with John and Terry, and it spreads down through all the workers, and it's really an incredible place to work. And I've really enjoyed my 13 years, and people look at me and they go, 13 years, and when you're at some place where you're making the wines you want to make, and you're treated well, and given all the tools you need, it's hard to go away. Why would you do anything else?
Exactly. I can understand that. Did you say tasting is available 7 days a week?
7 days a week, 10 to 4:30, 10 to 5 maybe. And really, again, you know, a family place. And we've really hit our stride, I think, as these four wines show. And it's just the place where you can step back to Sonoma County, really. I think of it as the pinnacle of what Sonoma County and farming and the neighborhoods of Sonoma County really mean, and the community and the people behind it. I mean, there's a reason we all live in Sonoma County, and this really plays into that reason.
BellettoVineyards.com. Anthony, great to see you again, man.
Thank you. Always a pleasure.
Yeah. It's been a long time.
It's been a while.
I think the last time you were in, I was out.
Correct.
So... Yeah.
Maybe 2 years. Okay. Anytime you need it, I'll be here.
All right, beautiful. You know what we're doing next week, Dan?
Next week we're going to do Don Chigazzola, the Italian guy, and he's bringing in some white wines.
We like Don Chigazzola. Good man. Good paisan. All right, have a great night.